All right, well, let's see how we go with this. We want to talk about a thing called the law of attraction, which a lot of people have heard of these days.
Yeah.
What does that say? How the universe constantly says yes to you.
Yeah.
And there's a little bit of a catch in that about how the universe constantly says yes to you, which is the catch seems to be that if you're focused on negative stuff,
you get more of that.
You get more of that.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we were just talking off the air about how it's kind of like social media. If you click on stuff that you like, social media's like Facebook's like, yep, we'll bring you more of that.
Yeah.
And if you click on the stuff you already hate, social media's like, yep, we'll bring you more of that too.
Yeah, that's right.
It's like, if you hated that, where do you see this?
So you need blockers to stop that happening. It's almost like, again, you know, it seems sometimes that you're on social media and you only think of something and then it appears in your feed and you go, well, that's weird, I only just thought about that. You must have clicked on something or at some stage for it to keep appearing in your feed.
I think that's just how good the algorithm is at this point in time at bringing you stuff that it thinks you'll click on.
Yeah.
So that's the metaphor. That's one metaphor. Do you want to maybe enlarge on what this means, this
yes.
law of attraction and the fact that the world will bring you more of whatever you're focused on?
Yeah. So a lot of people say, oh, the law of attraction is rubbish. You know, it's like the law of, what is it, the gravity.
All right.
So they say, oh, the law of gravity. You know, everybody knows what the law of gravity is. If you drop something, it's going to drop to the floor. It's not going to sail off into the sunset and
yeah.
float away, unless it's a balloon, right? So, and then even if people said, oh, I don't believe in gravity, it's still operating. You know,
yeah.
you drop something, you're going to fall. If you drop yourself, you fall to the floor. You know, you don't float away. So saying that the law of attraction is like that too. So saying you don't believe it is fine. It's still operating, though. And so what happens is whatever we think about, we attract more of. So, and that's whether it's positive or negative. So it's not, it's actually a scientific law. People think that it's just an esoteric or a spiritual law, but it's actually a factual law. So it most schools are still teaching Newtonian physics. But, you know, Einstein.
Epstein. They are not the same.
He didn't kill himself.
Very different categories. Or did he? We'll never know.
We'll never know. Einstein had different ideas, but they're still not teaching that stuff. And he noticed that something could be happening in one area and the same thing could be happening in another area, which he couldn't put his finger on what was causing it, and he called it spooky action at a distance.
He didn't really like it, did he?
No, he didn't like
it. It annoyed him.
Because he couldn't figure it out.
Yeah.
And so one of the things I did was, not him but somebody else, one of his colleagues at the time, took some cells and some atoms and split one and put one in one area and the other one got sent to 18 miles away. And what they found was that whatever was happening to one cell, one atom, one part of the atom, was happening at exactly the same time to the other one 80 miles away. So it wasn't like there was a little pause and then the other one reacted. It was
yeah.
happening at the same time. And this is what he calls spooky action at a distance.
And has this become the basis of quantum physics?
Yeah, so this is quantum physics. So this is quantum physics. It's been around, well, since Einstein was around. But, again, I don't know whether that's – I'm not in school, so I'm not sure that it's still being taught. But that it's been taught, I think they're still teaching Newtonian physics, which is out of date. And so this is basically the law of attraction. So it's scientific. It's not just, you know, oh, it's all
but
nice
know,
to think about and blah, blah, blah.
But I know that there'll be sciencey people out there – saying you can't take a scientifically proven thing and then extrapolate it to this spiritual idea. That's not science, they'll be saying.
Well, I don't really care what they think because I know it works. So when we focus on what we want, we get more of it. So the thing is to focus on what we want and not what we don't want. So we can focus on, you know, I'd like to have you know, whatever, well, I don't know, whatever it is. I've got a story about stuff that I've drawn to me in terms of law of attraction. So thinking about what I wanted and then those things have been drawn to me. And also, conversely, thinking about what I don't want and that's been drawn to me as well.
So I think it's... There's probably a complicating factor within that, and that a lot of people say, but I really, really want this thing. I really want it.
Yeah.
And it's not happening, so it doesn't work.
Right. So the thing is then is that because the universe is always saying yes, we have to think about how we're thinking. So if I say, oh, I want more money, then the universe goes, yeah, that's right, you want more money. And so you constantly experience that lack of money because it's showing you, yeah, you want more money.
So when you're saying, I really want something, what you're actually feeling is the lack of it?
Yeah, and so you get more of it.
Okay.
Yeah. And so when if it is like money and you're suffering from a lack of money, focusing on the lack of money is just going to give you more lack. And that's not easy then to think something differently. So you could look at your bank account and say you've got $100 in your bank account and go, oh, no, I've only got $100 in the bank account. And then the universe goes, yeah, that's right, you've only got $100 in your bank account. Or you think a different way and go, wow, I've got $100 in my bank account. Wow, yeah, it's going to increase, blah, blah, blah. And think of it in a different way and then it'll increase. Because it's hard to explain because it's going to sound airy-fairy, but it's about our frequency and how our emotions impact what we want.
So it's not just a matter of pretending you think it. Like
it's almost, like you've got to live it, so even though you haven't got it.
So you've got to feel it as for you, because you just said emotions there.
Yeah. So it's the emotions that really attract it to you. But in order to get the right emotions, often we have to use our other senses to get there. So we think about what we see, what we hear, what we feel, what we taste, what we smell sometimes, if it depends on what you want. And also what you say to yourself, because often we talk to ourselves in negative language and our unconscious mind can't process negatives very easily. So if we say, if I say to you, don't think about a purple teddy bear, you know, you have to think about a purple teddy bear before you cannot think about a purple teddy bear.
Yeah.
If you're saying, oh, I haven't got enough money, then, you know, you're thinking about a lack of money. So you get more lack. So focusing on our thinking, not only what we say to ourselves, but the images and sounds that we create in our mind is going to bring us more what we want rather than more of what we don't want.
I think like a really simple way of this is, I think we all know people who are super negative and they've got the view that nothing ever works out.
Yeah, and so that's what happens.
And that's what happens. one of the parts of that is that they never see opportunities.
Mm.
They don't see the positive opportunities. They pass them by or they're like, oh, there's no point even trying because it'll never work out.
Yeah.
And I had, like, I'm trying to think, how do I do this, tell the story without the person being obvious who it was. Someone had a trouble with the roof and the landlord wasn't fixing it. And I was like, why don't we just go up and fix it ourselves? Like, oh, there's no point, you know.
Right.
I just ignored that. I went up and I fixed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this other person would have just gone on with a leaky roof.
Right, right.
And it would have reinforced their belief that just things are hopeless.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. There was a video, and it's on YouTube now. And it's, I can't think of the guy's name now. He does this kind of hypnosis in the UK. I'll see if I can find it on my phone while we're talking. Anyway, he did this experiment with a whole community called Todd Morden. I see I can remember the name of the place and I can't remember the name of the guy. Darren, what's his surname?
Brown.
Darren Brown, that's it.
There we go.
Brown, So, there it is, Todd Morden, hypnotherapy. So what he did is he wanted to see if people created their own luck. And I think the video was about 40 minutes or something because it was and so he went to this place called Todd Morden. And first of all, he sent a researcher in there that was going to interview some of the people. And there was this dog, like a dog statue in the local cemetery. And so he had this person go in and just say to a few of the locals, you know, do you know about the lucky dog? Can you tell me something about the lucky dog? Well, you know, nobody goes, but the lucky dog, what do you mean the lucky dog? And he just made that up, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then after a while, you know, this thing took about, I think it was either 3 or 6 months to set the whole thing up. So then he... you know, people going, lucky dog, I don't know about the lucky dog. So then people would visit the lucky dog, in inverted commas, and stroke the lucky dog, which is like a concrete statue. And then they started having more luck. So then he came in, said he was doing, it's called the luck experiment, I think. So he went into the town and said, oh, you know, how many of you know about the lucky dog? And we're doing this experiment on luck. And so interviewed one guy who was the local butcher. I think his name was Wayne. And he said to him, you know, how lucky do you think you are? And he said, oh, he said, I'm really lucky. He says, the only luck I ever have is bad luck. He said, my brother is different. He said, he's always winning things and he has great luck. I have nothing but bad luck. And he gave all these examples of bad luck, you know. So then what they did is they, part of the experiment again, is they had things like in Wayne's path, they put, I think it was a £5 note or a £10 note or something, like somewhere where he couldn't possibly miss it, but he missed it because he wasn't looking. He didn't think he had any luck. He walked straight over this, and you can see it's on film, straight over this £20 note or whatever it was. And then they had people in the street doing, you know, asking quizzes, and if you could get the quiz, then you got £50 or something. So the quiz was about cuts of meat, and he was a butcher, right?
Right.
So I said, oh, would you like to do our quiz? If you win, you know, then you get £50. He says, no. And he just carried on, right?
Well, there you go.
He would have got it. So that's another one. And then, you know, like they tried all these things to get him to to pay attention and to win something, and he just ignored them all. And the last one, it's unbelievable. They had this huge trailer. Massive trailer, and it said something like, if your name's Wayne, ring this number.
Yeah.
Right? And I drove it past where he was several times, and he saw it, but didn't do anything for like a day, and then he rung the number. And then they got him in and said, look, we've got video of you, and these are all the opportunities that you've missed because you believe that you don't have good luck. And in the meantime, you know, they'd had a trip to like Blackpool or somewhere where all these, the coach trip, where all the people went on the trip and to play different games and see if they could win things. And they checked it with like the law of averages, and they were way above the law of average because they all believed by this time that it was a lucky town and the dog was lucky and they'd stroke the dog and they were going to have lots of good luck. So it was just a belief that I'd adopted because somebody way back a few months earlier had said, do you know anything about the lucky dog that's in the cemetery right down the park or something? So these people that were on the coach then had got way above the average that number of people could get in terms of winning things.
Yeah.
So when they showed Wayne all the opportunities that he'd missed, he was gobsmacked. He couldn't believe it, you know. And so then at the end, they did this thing where he said, "You can give me some money, and you know, with a flick of the dice, you could win something like 10 times the amount." And so it was him, and he gave $1,000, £1,000, I think it was, which he said was his life savings.
This
I don't think his wife even knew about it. And they set up this thing where he says, "We'll do." Flick of the dice, but it was this big contraption they had with like Perspex tubes and the, you know, they had to set it up so it was a bit dramatic. And which dice throw do you want? There was like 6 dice throws, and he said, I think he said number 4 or something, the 4th one. And so each time the dice came out, and he won. He got like £10,000 or something.
Or was it rigged?
I don't know. I mean, we don't know about that. We only know that he won at the end, you know, and he got, but you saw the dice. But it was really interesting that he didn't believe he had any luck, and because he didn't believe he had any luck, he didn't see any opportunities.
Yeah.
Like there was something like 5 things. Oh, another one was, you know, you get these things in the letterbox, and it says if you scratch here, you could win something. So they put one in his mailbox, and he was going to win a television if he'd scratch it. He threw it in the rubbish.
Right.
So, you know, there was so many things that he missed because he didn't believe that he was lucky.
So let's talk about, I know we've talked about this before, but let's talk about the brain and how there's a part of the brain that filters, like we get too much information and then we can handle, and the brain has a filter. Mm. So talk about that and how that affects that.
So what happens is we've got stuff happening outside of us all the time, and we process it through our five senses, what we see, hear, feel, taste and smell, to make a kind of a map of reality. So we're all experiencing reality differently because we all filter information differently. Some things some people perceive as good and other people perceive that as bad. And then we add in another modality, it's called, which is self-talk. You know,
yeah.
So we're processing through our five senses and then we add in self-talk and we talk about, you know, what it is that we experience. And then that affects our state. So if we, you know, if we're experiencing something and we're interpreted as being terrible, then we're going to feel nervous and upset or anxious. And if we're feeling good about it, like an example could be a roller coaster. Some people love roller coasters, you know, they're like really excited about it, and other people would be terrified, you know, they wouldn't even go on it. But it's the same thing. They're both looking at a roller coaster, but we have different interpretations of it. And it might be an extreme example, but it's still an example.
Yeah.
And then depending on how we feel, then we respond from the state that we're in, depending on how we've perceived that external reality. And so it works the other way as well. When we're in a better state, we perceive things differently. So the key is then to be in a good state so we have a better life and we experience life in a more positive way, which isn't always easy if we've been used to, and you know, the way we've been brought up, or we've been just used to talking to ourselves in a negative way and experiencing things in like Wayne in the Todd Morden experiment, then, you know. But the thing is, we have to change that before we can change. We can't change what's happening outside of us. We can only change our reaction to it.
So how much of the information, available information coming to us at the moment, at any one time, how much of that gets filtered out?
About 98%.
So only 2%.
Yeah.
Like, I know I'm in a room full of posters and things, and I'm not reading every poster and all that. And I'm mostly paying attention to you or thinking about what my next question might be.
Yeah.
So
we're filtering. We just go in, we look around the room and go, oh, yeah, pictures on the walls, a lot of stuff in here, you know. And we kind of generalise it's a room when it's got, you know, microphone in front of my face and there's, you know, whatever that is there. What do you call
mixing
that?
Mixing desk.
A mixing desk.
You see, you've paid a lot of attention to it.
I've kind of seen it just looks like a load of knobs and buttons to me.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you've got, three, four, five computer screens, you know.
But I don't have to say, don't look at all that stuff. Like, my brain already knows.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, if you said to me, don't look at all that stuff, then I'd have to look at all that stuff.
What I'm trying to say is I'm not consciously deciding what to ignore and what not to ignore.
No,
like, there's a part
based,
of my brain
it's
that's
based
doing
on
that.
The filters, like your beliefs and values, and you know what you perceive as the things that are important to you, memories that you might have had from the past, the language that you use, all kinds of things.
That's a really key thing in my understanding of how the world works for people.
Yeah.
And I think I've talked about this too before. When I was younger, I used to always have this little assumption that, not that someone was out to get you, but people might be trying to do something negative or say something negative or you know, there might be something controversial happening.
Right.
And I got sick of being wrong about that and getting I mean, it didn't happen very often, but maybe getting into an argument or finding out later that I'd got it wrong. So this is something I actually made a conscious decision, just to assume everyone had good intentions.
Right. And so that's
and then by
a good
and large,
point.
I just after that, I just seemed to not meet people who had bad intentions.
Right.
And I don't know whether they were there and I just didn't see the stuff they were doing or notice the, like, maybe a subtle comment that they were making. It just went over my head, or whether I just was not meeting them at all. But either way, they kind of worked out.
Well, you changed the belief. You change the belief. When you change your belief, it changes your whole life, because then you're not looking for it anymore. One of the things that we do on the training that I'm running is, you know, in fact, this last week was a belief change, and there's several different ways of changing a belief. So we did one this block, and we'll be doing another one on the next block, because beliefs are one of the filters. And so when we change a belief, so your one was, people are out to get you.
Well, but looking for people with bad intentions.
Yeah, so
if you look
then
for them,
what happens,
you find them.
Yeah, exactly. When you look at them, when you're looking at your world through that, then you're going to find them. Whereas people who believe that, you know, 90% of the population are, or even 99% of the population are, you know, there for with good intentions, and that's what you experience as well.
But also, I think you can trigger it as well. Like, if you're assuming that someone's got bad intentions, you'll misinterpret the stuff they're doing.
Exactly, yeah.
And then they will get annoyed with you after that.
Yeah.
And then they probably will have bad intentions towards you.
It's kind of like, I think we talked about it last time about trust. So if you believe that you can't trust people, then you'll look for things to confirm. Because again, this is the universe saying yes. You'll look for things to confirm that you can't trust people, and then you'll be a bit wary. And so people will pick up on that wariness and go, why, you know, there's something not quite right here. Why are they treating me like this? And then they'll start behave maybe in a slightly offhand way because they're perceiving that you don't trust them. And then you'll go, oh, that's right. They're behaving like that because they're untrustworthy. Yeah. So it kind of is a self-fulfilling prophecy, you know.
Yeah, or if you think people aren't that friendly, you'll always kind of just stand off a little bit. And then they'll pick up that vibe and they'll be like, they won't try to be very friendly either because you seem kind of distant.
Yeah. And that kind of comes back to the fact that we live in systems, you know. So you and I are in a system now, you know. I'm talking, you're listening, you're talking, I'm listening. And we've also got this wider system of people who are listening to us as well. And so whatever either of us do affects not only each other but also the people that are listening. And then so you can have a family system. So we know that if somebody in the family is sick, then it affects the whole family. If somebody in the family is having a tantrum, you know, hopefully one of the kids, one of the adults, then that affects the whole family as well. In a group, you know, if I'm training a group and somebody's not very resourceful, that affects, you know, what they're doing with the other person, it affects the whole group. So, and the same at work, you know, if you work in a team, one person, a moody person, can impact everybody. So that's the other part of it, is that because we're in systems, however we behave affects everybody else.
So I wanted to talk about this stuff, which is easier for people to get a handle on and seems you can kind of sense the mechanics of it, of the brain filtering information and things like that. Like people find that stuff easy to understand.
Yeah.
But you are also talking with the law of attraction discussion about, like Einstein said, spookier stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's in my book, actually, in my goal-setting book. There's a chapter, and I can't remember what it's called. It's got a really long title like Steph's Simplified Version of History, Quantum Physics, and the Law of Attraction, or something like that.
But with a simple title.
But the chapter's not got a simple title. And it says, you know, if all these things together make your hair curl or, you know, send you into a trance, then I'm with you on that as well. But, you know, so it's kind of a simple version of what we talked about before with these atoms being split and put in different parts and what Einstein calls spooky action at a distance. And so this is what we want to do when we're setting goals, is we want to be focusing on what we want. And so, you know, when I'm doing goal setting with people, I'll say, what do you want? And the first thing they'll do normally is tell me what they don't want. So they'll go, oh, well, I don't want to do this job anymore. And I go, so exactly. Oh, well, so they keep getting more of the same job, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so if you don't want that job, what do you want then? Oh, well, I don't want a job where I'm stuck inside all day. Okay, so again, they're telling me what they don't want, so they get more of that. Okay, so if you don't have a job where you're working inside all the time and you don't have a job that you don't like, what do you want? And often they can't tell me because they haven't actually thought about what they want. They're only thinking about what they don't want, so they keep getting more of what they don't want.
Even though usually if you're sure that you know what you don't want, you should be able to get to what you want from there. It might be the opposite, for example, a job outside.
It could be a job outside, or it might be that they want to be inside some of the time and outside the other time. But so sometimes that, just getting them to tell me what they actually want, I have to do a lot of work to get them to say what they actually want.
Yeah.
Because if I help them set a goal like, I don't want this job anymore, well, what sort of a goal is that? That's not a goal, right?
Yeah.
To just get out of this job. Is not a goal. It's like, what sort of job do you want? Where do you want to be working? Is it going to be inside? There's a whole lot of things about the job. And I think there's an example of that in the book as well, actually.
Can I talk about the environmental movement? Because the message of the environmental movement a lot of the time has been, we've got to stop doing what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And if what you're saying is the case, then that's actually not going to be a very good way to proceed.
Yeah, we've got to focus on what we want to do instead, or what we want instead.
And and people are. It's not like it's not happening.
Mm.
And I think it's happening more because we've known that we've been in for an environmental disaster for over 50 years now. So we don't need to establish that anymore. We don't need to raise awareness that there is an issue. Everyone knows there is an issue. But I think a lot of movements have trouble getting people on board with them while they're still focused on saying we can't do this anymore. We have to stop civilization right now.
It's not really appealing, is it?
No, a lot of people are quite uncomfortable with that in actual fact. Yeah.
So but what's happening there is that it's appealing to people who have an away from motivation. So they're motivated to move away from something that they don't like, but they're not really motivating the people who want to move towards, say, a clean, green environment. So because they use different language.
Well, think about Martin Luther King.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't say, I have a problem.
Yeah,
he
said, I have a dream.
I have a dream. Yeah, and maybe there's... I mean, that phrase has resonated and stayed with us for decades.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, there must be something to that.
Yeah, it's funny. I've got a problem doesn't resonate with people, isn't it? It's like, you got a problem. Yeah, boy, you should see the problems I've got, you know.
yeah, then it's a competition. Who's got the biggest problem?
Yeah, yeah. So it really is about focusing on what you want and really going back to your thinking, your... what images you're making in your head, but also what you're saying to yourself. So there's a book out called, well, it's not just out, it's an old book now, it's called Creative Visualization by Shakti Gawain. So I think I got it in maybe the 80s or something. And she doesn't talk about quantum physics because there wasn't the internet then. And
yeah.
It might even be older than that, actually. My copy's falling to bits. But that doesn't mean it's not relevant, you know. So I remember getting this book and I thought, I read it and I thought, oh, you know, I don't know whether I'll believe this or not. But I thought, oh, I'll give it a go. So I thought, what can I imagine that I'd like that I can go with it to try it out, you know. Because I thought I can't try it out with, you know, a brand new house or something like that. So I imagined somebody, I would imagine getting a pen in a box, like a nice pen, not just, you know, oh, here's my borrow if you want to borrow that, you know.
Yeah.
So, and I thought, oh, I'll just try that. So I just visualized this pen in a box for, I don't know how long it was, only a couple of weeks, I think. And at the time I was the human resources manager at a power company. And our guys had been having problems with the superannuation fund. So I asked for the superannuation guy to come in and talk to me about it. So he came in and at the end of the talk, which kind of sorted it out, and he opened his briefcase up and he took out this pen in a box. And he went, here's a pen for stabbing me in the back. I hadn't stabbed him in the back at all. I just, you know, asked the company to send somebody in to get it sorted out. And he was the one that got sent in. And I went, oh, my God, it's a pen. And I behaved like an idiot, like I'd never seen a pen before. Oh, my God, it's a pen. It was a Parker pen in a box with, you know, National Superannuation Fund on it or something. But the point was it was a pen in a box. And it wasn't just a borrow. It was what you'd
visualised. It's kind of funny the way it came about too. Like,
I know, exactly.
Grudgingly giving you this thing.
And then I thought... So I was really, you know, inspired by that, you know. And so I thought, oh, I'll visualise a watch. So at the time, I was into, like, Swatch watches. I mean, I never wear a watch now, but I liked, and I never took them off. When I took them off, it looked like I was still wearing one because I had this white patch where the thing had been, you know. And I visualised this black watch, this black sort of medium-sized face, and it didn't have any numbers on it. It just had red markings and red hands.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen it anywhere, just imagined it, you know. And I think I only did that for about 3 weeks. I'd do it a couple of times a day, just when I was relaxed and just thinking about it, imagining that I'd have got it. And then one day my ex-husband came around because we were still friends and he was working in the print industry. And anyway, put his hand in his pocket. So I said, I've got something for you. And I said, oh, what's this? He said, oh, I said, it looked like your kind of thing. I thought you'd like it. So I opened it up and there was this watch.
Yeah,
and I was like, I couldn't believe it because I hadn't seen it, not to my conscious knowledge anyway, anywhere. It wasn't a dear watch or anything. It was just a black plastic watch. But it was the fact that I'd visualised it, and then here it was in this box that my ex-husband gave me, you know. So then I was like, okay, I'm on a roll now. So then I visualised a computer, which is really before people were getting computers at home. And
we are going back then.
Well, yeah, exactly. And then I thought this one day I was driving a little Honda City.
Did you get the computer?
I did. Yeah, my family just it happened. I mean, I hadn't asked them. They sent me a check for, I think it was £1,500 or something. Might have been £1,500, something like that. Because they said, oh, we never send you birthdays or Christmas presents. So we just, the whole family just put something together and sent me a check. I was like, oh, my God. So then I was like, oh, I want a car. So I was driving this Honda City that I haven't even seen one for years. It was like a kind of a mini, oh, I can't really describe it really because I haven't seen one. Anyway, it's had four seating, but the two back seats folded down right behind the front seat so I could get my two dogs in the back, you see. Yep. And it was an ex-meter reader's car, so it's, you can imagine the type of car that it was. And yeah, I bought it off the power company. I thought, I'll get that. And it was a great little car. It was like sitting in a truck because you were quite high up, even though it was a small car. And I thought, oh, I need a bigger car. You know, I can't get these dogs in here. And I was going away to dog shows. So I started thinking, well, what do I want? And I thought, oh, I'd really like a Honda Civic, you know, hatchback. So I went down to the local Honda dealer and got a brochure. And there was a red one on the front. And they actually had a red one in the showroom as well. So I sat in it, and it was really low compared to the Honda City, which was quite high. So I imagined sitting in it and waving to all my friends like the Queen or something, you know, and the stereo on and that new car smell, all the senses that I could involve in it. And I imagined this. And I got the flyer to remind me of what it looked like, you know. And I also wanted a tow bar so I could tow a dog trailer, because some friends of mine have got dog trailer. I thought I could take the dogs in the dog trailer. So I visualised this for a couple of months, I think, and I did it, you know, like twice a day. And my conscious mind's going, oh, you're just dreaming. You're driving around in this Honda City. I just got divorced, so I didn't have any furniture in the house or anything.
Yeah.
I was trying to get back on my feet. And then so I thought, well, you know, I got the watch and I got the pen and, you know, I'll just keep visualising what I want. And then one day my boss came in and he said, I'm going to restructure. And I said, oh, okay, what are you going to do? And he says, well, I said, I'm going to set up another department called Corporate Services Department, and I want you to run that. And I said, well, what does that entail? And he says, well, he says, you'll still have HR, but you'll also have health and safety, and you'll have this and that and the other, and the stores. And I went, oh, okay. He said, of course, there'll be more money. He said, and there'll be a company car. He says, what sort of car would you like? I said, I'd like a red Honda Civic hatchback with a tow bar, please. And he went, oh, okay. And the next week I had my car. Right.
So, all right, I'm going to find ways to argue with you. Why do you not now have, you know, the big house on the hill, and why do you still have to work? Why can't you just imagine everything that you want in your life, well, to come into your life?
Well, who says I have to work? Who says I want a house on the hill, a big house on the hill? There's only me. Why would I need a big house on the hill?
Okay.
And the other thing is that I can't imagine not doing what I do because I love it. Why would you give up something that you love?
Yeah.
So,
okay. So, those are good answers. You are, I think, generally, well, I know you to be a positive person.
Yeah.
Who's not thinking, oh, you know, the world's a terrible place and nothing ever goes right for me. So, I'm wondering you just said you'd just been divorced at that time, but you must have still had some reasonable expectations about the world, that it wasn't a terrible place. Like, I imagine if you're someone who thinks the world is a terrible place, that trying this kind of creative visualization, you kind of be fighting against yourself.
Yeah. So even I did, you know, because I was thinking logic, because of the way we've been brought up to be logical, you know, left brain thinking, it doesn't make any sense to be creative. It's using another part of your brain. And the thing is, as well, it's not just thinking about, I want this and I want this. It's got to be, because if you're like, I want this, there's a certain energy of, like, desperation, I'll call it, right?
Yeah.
So it's got to be, like, more like a daydreaming quality, like, oh, you know, wouldn't it be, like, if you thought, oh, wouldn't it be nice, you know, on this cold day if I was lying on a beach in Fiji, you know, that kind of, oh, this would be, that kind of relaxed kind of thinking, not I really need this now and I need to win Lotto this week, otherwise, you know, blah, blah, blah. That's not the right thing. It's got to be a relaxed thing. And then it's also about taking action. Like, if I'd have said, no, I'm not going to do the job, I wouldn't have got the car.
Yeah.
And the other thing, that there's a thing on the website about a black pearl that I got. So this was 2000. My friend came out from England. She said to me, I've bought you some money from your brother, sister, your two brothers, your sister and your brother-in-law. So it was £170. no, £150. And I said, oh, yeah, okay. And so at the time it was $370. So I changed it into New Zealand dollars. And she says, but you've got to buy something nice with it. And I said, okay. So this friend of mine, Pat, she likes shopping. So every day we shopped, except, oh, God, except New Year's Day. I convinced her that the shops were shut. They weren't, but I convinced her that they were. So on the second of January, we went to Manukau Mall.
Yeah.
And she says, what do you want to buy? And I said, I don't know, maybe some nice crockery. Now, before this, I'd just visualised a black pearl.
Yes.
I thought it'd be nice to have a black pearl. It wasn't, you know, like, wasn't like I needed a black pearl, but I just thought it'd be quite nice. So I hadn't done a lot of visualisation on it. So anyway, we went to Farmers and I looked at the crockery and there wasn't anything that I wanted. And as we were walking past Pasco's, I saw these black pearls in the window. I said, oh, that's what I want, a black pearl. So we had a look and they were all $3,500. So I went, oh, okay. Maybe not. I said, let's go to Michael Hill. Now, at the time, Michael Hill was selling cheaper jewellery than, this is year 2000, so it's 20-odd years ago. Yeah. Let's go to Michael Hill. So they had one in there for 350 and it was like earring size.
Yeah.
So I said, oh, no, okay, let's go to it was lunchtime. Let's go to the food hall and get some lunch. So we went to the food hall and she said, oh, I'll go and get the lunch. You find a table because it was packed, you can imagine. So I found this, you know, half a table, you know, where they are, next to this guy in a suit. And I thought that was unusual seeing a guy in a suit. But anyway, I sat there and he got this young kid in a pushchair and a 15 or 16-year-old with him. And anyway, they were speaking French. So I used to live in France. So I said, bonjour, and I was a couple of things to him. And I said, can I sit here? And he goes, yeah, yeah. So I sat there and waited for Pat to come. She sat opposite me. And about 5 minutes later, this really elegant woman walked behind him and sat opposite him. And I thought, well, obviously, it's his wife, you know. Anyway, they were talking and they said that they were from New Caledonia, that they'd bought that come here on holiday. Anyway, I looked at her again and she had this, like a necklace of black pearls, like big black pearls all around the neck, right? And I looked at it, I thought, God, this must be worth about 150 grand, you know, based on the price of these ones that we've seen in Pasco's. And so and then I looked at her again, she had black pearl earrings, and I said to Pat, I said, look at her necklace. And Pat kind of looked at her, and then her eyes were out like saucers. And then she lifted her arm up and she had a black pearl bracelet on and a black pearl ring. I was like, this is like talking about in your face, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So I said to her, I said, I really love your necklace. And she goes, oh, thank you. And I said, oh, so we've just been looking at black pearls in the shop. I said, but they're really expensive. And so she bent down. So this is honestly true. She bent down and she picked up a handbag and she reached into a handbag and she brought this pouch out and she gestured to me to put my hand out and she tipped out into my hand 8 black pearls.
Wow.
Right. And I was like in a trance, you know, looking at these black pearls. And so, again, if I didn't take any action, I would have said, oh, yeah, they're really lovely and give them back to her. So, but I said to her, would you like to sell one? And she said, oh, I don't know which one. And I pointed to one and she said, oh, no, not that one. And I pointed to another one and she said, yeah, okay. She said, how much? And I said, well, how much do you want? And she said, $200. And my friend says, oh, that sounds fair, quick as a flash. So I said, are you sure? And she goes, yeah, yeah. She said she bought them to get them set because it was cheaper to get them set in New Zealand than in New Caledonia. So I went off and got the money out of the ATM, brought it back to her. I said to her, just stay here with her, you know. Got the pearl and then we left. And then my conscious mind kicked in, like, she's probably a con artist. She's been following you around the jeweller's shops and she's just sold you some plastic covered in shell or something, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, I went back home and I took it to the jeweller in Papakura where I lived and I said, look, could you set this for me? And could you give me a valuation and let me know how much it is? And I said, could you do it by next Thursday? Because my friend would like to see it before she goes back to the UK. So they rang me up on Wednesday and said, oh, we've set your pearl. And I said, oh, okay. She says, setting was $170. So that was the $370 that I had.
Right, perfect.
And I said, oh, that's fantastic. And how much is it valued at? And this is in 2000, $3,625.
Wow.
Right. So, you know, if you think about getting a black pearl, the last place you'd probably think of is the food hall at Marco City, right? But, you know, you get one, dive for one, or get it out of a shell or something.
Could
you
be
know?
Surprised.
So that story is actually on my other website, as is the stuff about the law of attraction, which is stephaniephilp.com.
So, folks, here we are talking to Stephanie Philp. We decided to talk about this concept of law of attraction today. We're kind of running out of time, but I've got a couple of questions I really want to ask.
Yeah, go on.
Someone's texted in and said, how does the belief that whatever will be, you know, that kind of c'est la vie thing, whatever will be,
oh, yeah.
How does that fit in with the law of attraction? It doesn't sound like it does.
Well, it depends on the rest of your beliefs, really, I think. So whatever will be, but what there must be some other thoughts underneath that.
That whatever will be sounds like someone who's like,
oh, it's kind of
giving up a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like just accept that things won't go well.
It could be, but not necessarily, because they might have a positive belief that whatever will be as well.
Yeah.
So that's what they're going to attract.
Yeah, so it's not enough just to.
And it's more, that. If you can be more specific, then that's more useful, you know.
We haven't got time for more specifics to come through. Because the one thing I wanted to ask about was money, the issues around money and beliefs around money, because I think in our culture, money is so central to a lot of what we do in our culture. Mm. I think that's the one where people's beliefs are the hardest to get around. Like people could believe, like, can understand, like you started off small with a pen when you were imagining.
Yeah, because I couldn't think about getting a car. But
it was unimaginable that a car would drop out of the sky for you. But it was conceivable that someone might give you a pen.
Yeah, exactly.
And so you I guess, subconsciously started off with something simple.
But the thing is, the universe doesn't care whether it's a house or a pen.
No, but if you're saying it's based on our beliefs,
that's
then our beliefs around money are that, well, for starters, there's a lot of beliefs that we shouldn't have too much, that it's bad for us to have too much.
Yeah, and so that's what you attract.
So and I'm pretty sure I have that because I have enough. Like I'm not dirt poor, and I'm not broke, or you know, and I'm not worried about money.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also not
mega rich.
I'm not going beyond that either. Mm.
So that's what we attract. And the other thing is sometimes people go, oh, I want $1 million, you know, and I go, well, okay, what would you do with $1 million? So if you focus on what you want to do with the money, that's more useful.
Yeah.
Because it's like, okay, I have $1 million in the bank, okay. So, well, you could see, you know, imagine $1 million in your bank account, but often it's usually because we want something with that money. So focusing on that. So I've never focused on the money. I've always focused on what I want to do with the money, what the end result of having that money will do.
We've also got people who are at a different stage in life or a different life where they've not got enough money.
Mm.
And are they in danger? Is there a possibility that they'll trap themselves in that situation for their whole lives because they take that, not extrapolating for the rest of their lives, but they have a belief that money is hard to come by.
Yeah, and so that's what they experience, and this is why I'm saying it's really hard when you're in that situation to think about it in a different way. So what I'll say to people is just imagine that you had a different belief for, say, 3 weeks. You know, just adopt a different belief, like try it on for size for a few weeks. So go, you know, I see abundance everywhere. So some people do. They go, oh, I see abundance everywhere. You know, I look at the ocean and the fish, like the fish were jumping this morning. And so it's a different way of thinking, and it takes a bit of doing because we've been programmed to think that, you know, there's a scarcity.
And, I think for money, that's the hardest one. I mean, a lot of scarcity is artificial scarcity. I mean, you look at, I don't know, De Beers who do the diamonds from South Africa. Yeah. They've got plenty of diamonds. They don't release them because they're creating artificial scarcity.
Exactly. And they're not really that worth that much anyway. It's just that they've created that to be worth, you know, millions. But they're
artificial scarcity has been created in most markets. If someone can get away with it, they will.
They will, yeah.
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 And we believe it and we accept it. And we accept that there's not enough houses for people, even though there's buildings empty and office buildings that could be converted. There's things we could do.
Mm. So we have to change our mindset. The mindset comes first. Whereas we think, you know, oh, when I see this happening, then I'll believe it. That's a saying that
I'll believe it when I see it.
When I see it, yeah. But it's actually the opposite, that you see it when you believe it. You have to believe it first. And that's the difficult part, especially if you're struggling. So what I'm recommending to people is try on a new belief for a few weeks and see what difference it makes in your life. That's the only thing I can really say at the moment here, because I've got the opportunity to work with people individually.
Yeah. So you're just, so a lot of your NLP stuff is like dealing with phobias, or as an example.
And beliefs and all sorts of
and
things.
And beliefs, yeah. But this is quite...
It's interesting because it isn't, because it kind of, I think NLP explains the law of attraction quite well. So because that's why I've got two websites. So I've got Inside Your Mind, which is the one that we talk about when we're on here, but I've got another one called stephaniephilp.com, which is more the spiritual aspects of life. And so people can go to that one and look at the article about the back pearl. It's called How to Get What You Want When You Don't Have the Money.
Yep.
And that story is on that web, is on that blog post. And then there's this one that we talked about just, which is called, what is it called? The Law of Attraction Works. How the Law of Attraction Works, the Universe Constantly Says Yes to You. And there's also a video of Neil Donald Walsh talking about how it works. So, you know, you go, oh, I haven't got enough money. The universe goes, that's right, you haven't got enough money. And so you have...
And that's the world you live in, where there's never enough money.
Exactly. And so changing that, changing the thinking. And that's not easy to do, because we're often thinking negative thoughts. So thinking about what you want rather than what you don't want.
This is kind of why I say not to watch the news.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it is... And unbelievably, like it could be, this is the thing that...
I always say don't watch the news, constantly saying don't watch the news.
Yeah, given that the news is something like I've immersed myself in for a couple of decades, it took me that long to learn that even the most accurate news, and I was all about getting the accurate news and not the establishment viewpoint, which was trying to achieve something else. But even if you had the most accurate news... If it's all negative stuff, then you're not getting an accurate view of the world. Mm. You get a very, very distorted view of the world.
Well, you wouldn't go out if you only watched the news. If that's all you saw on television, you'd never leave the house.
I mean, we could do an experiment now. Everyone's listening. Look out the window. Is there anything bad happening outside your window? I guarantee that no one listening right now, if they looked out the window, would see anything bad.
Yeah.
Well, there might be one person, right? I mean, there might not be many people listening, but, you know.
I'm sure there's thousands out.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's... I should have that belief, shouldn't I?
Yeah.
But my point is that most of the time, for most of the world, mostly good stuff is happening.
Yeah.
But we have this amazing system that brings us all the negativity.
Yeah, keep focus on fear all the time.
Yeah, and it's and people, you often hear people say, oh, we live in a terrible world, it's a terrible world we live in, and everyone thinks that that's quite a normal thing to say. Even if they don't fully agree with it, they still think that's quite a normal thing to say, and I think the news has attuned us to thinking, oh, this terrible stuff happening everywhere.
Yeah, being programmed.
Yeah.
That's why they call it programming.
Yeah. Yeah. It's sort of giving the game away. But
the television.
I don't think we fully appreciate what a powerful distortion that is. Like, I'm still getting my head around it.
And some people have the news on like 24/7. They just have it going all the time. So even when they're not paying attention to it, it's still going into their unconscious mind.
And you are better informed, but you're only better informed about...
Yeah,
and
it's not all negative. What they want you to know.
Yeah, well, there's that. But this is what I'm saying. Even because I tried to create news that was not about what they wanted us to know, still very negative, because you're also looking at the fact that there's these megalomaniacs who are trying to control what we think as well. You just put that in the mix as well, and then the world is even more hopeless. And I saw a lot of people do that around COVID from both sides.
Yep.
Some people who thought that, who were focused on the conspiracy to defraud us of our rights and went to quite a dark place, and other people who focused on, you know, COVID's coming to get me and living in fear for a long time.
Dark place as well, yeah.
Yeah, and they were in a dark place. So people, so even though they had opposite views, like if you put those two people in the same room, they'd quickly get into an argument about what should be done about COVID. But my point is to get outside of that and say, well, they're both anxious and they're both put into a place of being reactive.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's so that's been my lesson about the news. I used to be guy.
Constantly telling people not to watch the news.
Yeah. So I don't read it anymore.
Yeah, good.
As in literally read it on the radio. I stopped doing that. Yeah, but it's still like one step. There's still, it's, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, just to because we have gone over time now. Yeah. It's more about then focusing on for people to focus on what they want, focus on the positive, in a gentle, peaceful way rather than a desperate, you know, way.
Yeah.
Because that's the desperate, right? Desperation is the wrong energy that you want to send out. And, yeah. you know, have a look at the StephanieFilp.com. There's other things on there as well about law of attraction and bringing to you what you want.
Yeah, and don't try your creative visualization straight after watching the news.
No, be in the right state first.
Undermine it, yeah. Hey, Stephanie, been a really interesting discussion this morning. Thank you for coming in.
You're welcome, anytime.
And we'll see you again in a few weeks.
Okay.